Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A cat has revived after a Portland fire. An SUV slams into an ambulance, and Ford is building a secret new car.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, steel yourselves, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, January 20th, 2011. A cat was brought back to life after a fire at a fourplex at a southeast Portland fourplex on Wednesday.
All right, hold on, No, that's really wrong. I don't think I have anything.
Happy cat music? Okay. The Portland Fire Bureau said a cigarette fell into a couch in one of the units, causing a fire at the complex on Southeast 151st Avenue around 4:45 p.m. Crews initially received reports that someone was inside the unit at the time of the fire, but no humans were found.
The calls are coming from inside the house.
And they keep saying, meow, meow. As firefighters investigated, they found an unconscious cat in the back bedroom of the apartment that had been overcome by smoke. Using specialized equipment, the crews resuscitated the cat, which was taken to the vet for future care.
I want to know what specialized equipment they have that was sufficient to perform CPR on a feline. Is that a thing they just carry around with them? Not that I'm opposed to it. I mean, my tax dollars pay for that. That's okay. I'm curious. It's more of a scientific query.
Maybe they do, because I know that there's these stickers that you can put in the front window
cat
of your house.
Cat in house.
Yeah, it says that we have pets. You know, there's one cat and a dog or something like that, so that if firefighters come, they will look to make sure they get your cat and your dog out. So maybe they have tiny little, like, masks for oxygen or something.
That's adorable. By the way, you never see that about dogs. It always just says cat. It's like cats in a house. Crazy in owner.
In all, more than 30 fire crews responded to the incident. The total damage is estimated around $638,000. Firefighters said the unit had a smoke detector, but it wasn't operable because there were no batteries in it.
Well, no, because Mama got to choose between her battery and her cigarette, clearly. So, and I think we know where she falls down on that side of the line.
And kitty treats.
Exactly.
Kitty treats ain't cheap.
By the way, our good friend Courtney Hameister put up a Twitter post about this last night where she said, you know, it's just so hard to remain bitter and jaded in this world when you hear about a firefighter performing CPR on a kitten somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a thing that is almost designed by God himself, by the hand of providence, just to put a smile on your face in dark, bleak times, my friends.
Is this the moment when I roll out of bed in my pajamas and I eat Mr. T's cereal and feed myself with a candy gun while sliding down a pole to taunt Francis with my bicycle?
Yes.
All right. You're listening to Legion of News, and good afternoon to you. It is Thursday, January 20th, 2011. Thank you for coming by. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. Coming up later on this hour, we have your entertainment news, also your science on the march. If you want to get this program via your mobile device, you can do that. It's mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. You can also get it later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Portland police are investigating a deadly crash after an SUV slammed into an ambulance. Investigators said an AMR ambulance was on an unrelated medical call, parked with its lights flashing around 2:15 a.m. at East Burnside and 102nd. Two paramedics had just put a patient on a stretcher in the ambulance. One of the paramedics was outside closing the rear doors when a Kia SUV speeding westbound on Burnside, going around 80 miles per hour, slammed into the ambulance.
Thank you for not making a slambulance joke.
It hadn't even occurred to me.
Okay.
Until now.
It occurred to me because that's the only thing I'm good for.
The patient on the stretcher was thrown out of the ambulance due to the force of the crash. Oh, there's a lawsuit.
Yeah.
Rescuers then rushed the patient and one of the paramedics to the hospital, and police said they were not seriously hurt.
So he was where?
There's still going to be a lawsuit.
So the guy is in the ambulance, preparing to be treated. A Kia just sort of comes from nowhere?
Well, they put the patient on the stretcher in the ambulance. So I think, two paramedics were in the ambulance with the... Yeah, and...
Are these two totally unrelated vehicles that have nothing to do with one another?
Yes.
All right, Mrs. Jones, you're going to be just fine. There's nothing that could...
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden,
and then she gets thrown out of the ambulance.
What is the IE? Is Xena driving the Kia?
No, that was the woman on the stretcher.
Okay.
In midair. IE! That was as she was flying through the air.
Is she the Frito Bandito?
She could be.
Okay.
It could happen. Okay, the Frito Bandito was a guy.
I'm just saying.
And a cartoon.
Well, I don't know that we really know that, by the way, because the Frito Bandito was masked. And also a cartoon, I think.
And that could have been a fake mustache. Or a lady with a giant mustache.
That's right. So,
I used to work at KBOO. I've seen that.
So being transported. So in the ambulance on the stretcher, and then all of a sudden the big God drops the Kia hammer from nowhere. Presumably to make up for saving a cat somewhere else in a really adorable way.
That's right.
Slams into this woman, and then she lands where?
In the street. She just was...
Wow.
Well, she was on the stretcher, so I'm assuming the entire stretcher just went... Just rolling out the back of the ambulance and then flying into the street.
Sort of like O.J. Simpson and the Naked Gun. Just boom, 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 boom. Out into the field.
Yeah, or Manhunter. Oh, no, wait. That was a wheelchair. The autopsy will likely determine whether the person who was driving the Kia, who died, by the way, had any drugs or alcohol in his or her system at the time of the crash, or if they were just driving 80 down Burnside and just decided to slam into an ambulance.
By the way, I'd like to congratulate the woman.
That had lights on.
I'd like to congratulate the woman who was on the stretcher on the hospital you now own. I'd like to encourage you to take Rick Emerson and Don Taylor out to lunch at some point with the largesse, which clearly is going to be coming your way at some point.
Yeah, in a year or so, when the jury finds in your favor, please remember to invest in Cascadia.fm and the Emerson News Network.
I hope your spine still works at that point.
A pigeon that carried 45 grams of drugs into a prison was found by police Tuesday a few meters away from a jail in the northern Colombia city of Bucaramanga. The find exposed a drug transport method that even authorities have described as, quote, clever. Bucaramanga Police Commander Jose Mendoza said the pigeon was carrying 40 grams of marijuana and 5 grams of bazuco, a cheap mix of freebase cocaine and other substances, towards the Modelo prison. However, the bird could not reach its goal because the weight made it tired and it fell to the ground.
Well, it seems like that's the thing where the answer is in the question. If you have the pigeon carrying drugs... You just juice him up a little bit, you know what I mean? What are drugs for if not to motivate you and give you a sort of surface energy?
Police officers watching the area realized the pigeon was trying to fly and sought to help the animal. They saw it, I guess, flopping around.
Never take me alive!
And then they realized that small packages had been tied to its wings.
Awesome.
Mendoza said it's not the first time the pigeon couriers have been recruited by criminals. The authorities recently found one bird that carried cell phones into a maximum security prison in central Colombia.
That's fantastic. I like to see nature and man working alongside each other because so often we just hear about, you know, it's an elephant trampling a family, or it's a tiger, tearing out somebody's entrails, or a monkey stabbing a guy in the eye. Here you have man, you have beast working together for a common goal. You know, the bird gets a little food out of that, guys get some drugs, maybe a little less raping in the prison. Everybody's happy. It's a win-win-win, except for the man who has to come in and ruin everything.
Yeah, damn the man.
Stupid man.
Ford is staying mum on a new vehicle it plans to build at its Kansas City, Missouri assembly plant. The automaker is investing $400 million in the plant, and spokeswoman Marcy Evans says the new work is good news for employees there.
It's going to be good news as soon as I find the cut. This is one of those things where I made the mistake this morning of not putting the cuts in alphabetical order. So they're just sort of, you know, they're here, but they're just sort of...
So I can't cleverly say, look under F. Because that won't help.
It wouldn't help me. All right, here we go. So this is Ford.
There's about 3,750 workers at that facility, and we have committed that the new product that will be built there will retain each and every one of those individuals.
And this is where?
This is in Kansas City, Missouri. Again, no idea what the vehicle is that they're going to be building there, but they're investing $400 million in the plant. Marcy Evans says it will play a key role in the company's future.
That money will be used to ready the plant for a new generation, a new product that will secure the future at that facility.
They should just full-on make flying cars. You know, they shouldn't even ask anybody if they can do it. They should just do it and then start selling them.
I say good for Ford, though, because one of my favorite parts of the Michael Moore film.
Roger and Me.
The next one. Bowling
the
for
Columbine.
Was it the big one?
Yes.
The one where he talked to Phil Knight? Or was that Bowling for Columbine?
That is the big one.
Was the big one? Where at the very end.
And he had the foot race?
Yeah, well, yeah. And he talks to Phil Knight, and he says, you know, I've got all of... I'm from Flint, Michigan, and the auto plants have closed down, and there's all these people that need work. Why don't you put in a Nike plant there? And he's like, well, I don't know if that would be... I don't know how much it would cost. I know how much it would cost. It would cost $10 million.
Right.
You pay Michael Jordan $100 million. Why don't you pay him $80 million and build a freaking plant somewhere that Americans could have jobs? And Phil Knight's like, well, get out of my office.
Is that before they... But did they do like a foot race or something where he's like, look, if you beat me, you don't have to build a plant. But if I can outrace you, then like you'll have to... Which, whatever anybody thinks about Michael Moore, that's one of those things where you just have to admit, if you're talking to a guy who's worth like $100 billion and who could just have you ground into a paste and put into a can somewhere, it takes a certain amount of cojones to just say like, look, jackass, like, why don't you just build, you know, why don't you just pay Michael Jordan less and build a thing here? And if, you know, and I will embarrass myself by racing you, on film for this, especially when you know that at any point Phil Knight could just go, I tire of this conversation, you know, executioner, you know, and then like suddenly
dump him in the pit of crocodiles.
And then like the sort of wacky guy with the black hood on and like a big scimitar sword thing comes out and just, you know, move along. And then so you never hear from Michael Moore again. And so I can sort of, I had that just like in that 10 seconds when I met Phil Knight a couple years ago, I had that moment of like, he could have me removed. He could just have me wiped out like an unpleasant grease stain. So. Well, there you go.
There was a 21-gun salute, but no fireworks during the early hours of Chinese President Hu Jintao's first state visit to Washington Wednesday, who was greeted with a military arrival ceremony? I don't know. Who was greeted? Who? What do you mean?
Who's a good president? Who? Who? Oh, roll over.
Among the spectators were Sasha Obama and some fellow fourth graders. President Obama and Hu each addressed the press.
God damn it. I want this story to be over. I want him to be back in China just so I don't have to do this anymore.
Oh, God, I hate it when I just crack myself up. President Obama and, you know,
Who?
That other guy. Each addressed the press, announcing a $45 billion trade deal between their countries and otherwise highlighting their common interests, like pandas. Our cooperation as partners should be based on mutual respect, Hu said. They say their meeting at the White House was fruitful. President Hu, through a translator, says he's encouraged by the tone of the meetings.
Is this one?
Yes.
The Chinese side appreciates President Obama's commitment to a positive and constructive China policy and to stable and growing China-U.S. relations.
What kind of effed-up computer translator does he have? This doesn't sound like a human being at all. Also, what kind of accent is this? It doesn't sound Chinese. It doesn't sound British.
I think it's a Chinese guy who went to that CIA American university and learned to speak American.
Seriously.
So he could be a translator and a spy.
But doesn't it almost sound like it's a computer voice?
The Chinese side appreciates President Obama's...
Would you like to play a game?
The Chinese side appreciates President Obama's commitment to a positive and constructive China policy and to stable and growing China-U.S. relations.
All right, really, my GPS sounds more human than this guy who actually is a real person.
See, in my head, I just see a guy who looks, a handsome man in a suit who looks kind of like Jin on Lost, who is doing his translation thing, but at the same time, he's just planting bugs everywhere, like under every table.
Okay, here's the funny thing about it. You know what I pictured? I pictured a guy, I pictured exactly the same thing. I pictured a tall, slender Asian man dressed like one of Tarantino's Reservoir Dogs guys. But then he was in a basement room, like on Alias, you know, and just like jabbing needles into Sloan, trying to get him to talk.
Everything we know comes from television.
The Chinese side appreciates.
All right.
Obama. Well, let's see. Who concedes the two countries disagree on some issues?
We discussed some disagreements in the economic and trade area, and we will continue to appropriately resolve these according to the principle of mutual respect and consultation on an equal footing.
By appropriately resolve, they mean crush with tanks.
Oh, yeah, and the whole political prisoners, yeah. and sweatshops and things like that. Obama made reference to human rights during his address, telling WHO, societies are more harmonious, nations are more successful, and the world is more just when the rights and responsibilities of all nations and all people are upheld.
Now, if you'll forgive me, I have to get back to assassinating Julian Assange.
And then WHO I think probably just nodded and went, yeah, whatever.
I own you.
He spent most of the day in meetings with U.S. officials and corporate leaders, including Lloyd Blankfein, who I have no idea who that is. He'll be honored at a state dinner this evening. The Obama administration has kept quiet about details of tonight's dinner, including the menu and guest list. But the Times says in terms of diplomatic protocol, the state dinner is a minefield. One source told the Times, a Nobel Peace Prize laureate is hosting a banquet for a leader who is imprisoning another Nobel Peace Prize laureate. How awkward.
It's like the world's most stressful sitcom plot, you know? I wonder if China just...
Uh-oh.
If that's just one of those things where it's like when Obama says, you know, when he tries to sort of lecture them in his, you know, in his admittedly polite but sort of stern way, that the China guy just goes, uh-huh, all right. And just because they know at home that, like, on his bedside table, there's just a huge pile of IOUs just stacking to the sky, you know, of just, you know, for, like, the 90% of the country that they own by this point.
Yes, pay us back some of that money you owe us, and we'll look into that human rights thing.
God almighty. All right.
Arizona Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords' husband said she will be moved to a rehabilitation hospital in Houston on Friday. Dr. Peter Ree says it's significant she's made so much progress only a couple of weeks after being shot.
This is
Giffords.
All right.
Somewhere on your screen.
The next time I decide to not put these in alphabetical order, remind me that this happened.
Do I have
today.
To ask you, like, every morning now, are they alphabetical before the show starts?
No, let's see here.
We're very pleased with her progression at this time period. Every day we still see improvement, so that's very enlightening for us.
Dr. Michael LaMole says her progress has been remarkable, but he cautioned people that the pace of a recovery may not always be this rapid.
It's not uncommon for people to initially improve and then plateau for a little while and then improve again. So everyone has to gear their expectations towards what she's willing to show for us as opposed to what we want.
So they tell radio clients, you have to manage your expectations now, because otherwise am I wrong about this? Did she actually talk or speak or something?
She has been responsive. Her husband believes that she recognized him and is responsive. There was an interview on ABC, I think it was, where he was talking about how even though she can't talk because she has the tubes in and stuff, she makes eye contact with him and then has there have been like certain gestures that he recognizes, like she took his wedding ring off and then put it on a different finger and was playing with it, that's apparently something that she has done in the past.
Okay,
and so I guess he believes they still don't know how responsive she is going to be, how much of her brain is going to be workable, but he believes that, you know, that she is there. So,
by the way, we have somebody noting that you in fact gave earlier the worst scream description ever, with just a "I." As the sort of auditory representation of what the scream sounded like.
Does no one else read comic books?
I think
that's what they do in comics. They go IE.
It's spelled AIEEEEE.
Yes.
Sort of trailing off the side of the page, and then there's kafoom.
Right.
Or something as you know, as Dr. Octopus blows something up.
Yeah.
You're listening to Legion of Doom. Legion of Doom. Wow. That was a thing that I just immediately fell into my dorkier earlier self. Hello, I'm Newsman Solomon Grundy. Thank you for joining us.
News good today. Bad crush you.
Well done. I was going to identify you as being Scarecrow, incidentally.
Oh, thanks.
Okay. Well, in any event, you're listening to Cascadia.fm. This is Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Now, that can't be accurate. Do we have another clown watch today?
We do.
Are
remember,
clowns just, are they somehow,
there has just,
is there an uprising?
There's been just a crazy bunch of clown stories lately.
All right. That freaks me out.
Yesterday was a sort of a science-related clown story about how clowns visiting you after in vitro fertilization can make you pregnant. But today we get back to our usual a guy dressed as a clown committing a crime, sort of a clown.
Anything that involves the phrase clown making you pregnant. Hey, by the way, did you get the email from that guy who suggested suggested the fetish that we might be able to monetize?
I did.
That's
I did
awesome.
Indeed. It was a good fetish.
We should talk about that
we
next
will.
Hour. Clown Watch coming up next hour on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Taser Watch as well. Also, Anna Griffin from the Oregonian will be in the studio with us, and we will. We set this up yesterday and then ran over time to get to it. We'll get to it today. Top five classic bubblegum songs of all time. That is coming up later on today at the Rick Emerson Show. That is rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
By the way, there is a sound file for you in the Dropbox to be used during the entertainment news. Just put it wherever you want, alphabetically or not.
Just randomly. Okay.
Yeah, just stick it.
Got it.
The city of Gannett, Pennsylvania, took a local business owner to court Wednesday over an ordinance that prohibits farm animals in the city limits. Frank Dragona, owner of Gannett Italian Store, was cited five times and ordered to appear in front of a district judge over the four goats he keeps on his property. After the court hearing, he told a local news station that he first considered the goats to be employees. "I hired them to cut the grass," he said. "Now I think of them as my friends." He said he even feeds the goats bread and produce from his Italian store. He was given a $1,500 fine, which he will appeal. His lawyer said, "The city is facing a lot of matters that have more importance than this. This is the kind of nuisance interruption that needs to be dealt with, but for whatever reason, it seems to get some entertainment value and attention." He named the goats after several city officials and marched them in last year's Halloween parade in Gannett, Pennsylvania. The goats even have a Facebook page with more than 2,000 friends. "I just like animals," Dragona said. "Is there a problem with that?"
Did he say at the beginning that he hired the goats, but then they became his friends?
Yes. Yes, he said that.
Okay. So the goats were the goats just standing around in a corner, and he just came by in a truck, and he's just like, "Work, work, work."
And, the goats went, and they jumped
hopped,
in the back of the truck.
In the back.
"I need you to cut the grass."
But then eventually he realized the goats were just like him, that they weren't so different, that under the skin, they were all the same.
They started hanging out.
Okay.
And he said, "Stay here with me. I'll bring you pasta and bread from my store." And they said,
And they made him some of their sumptuous ethnic dishes. And
yes.
then they all bonded. And then there was a montage where they sang to like a Stevie Wonder song or something.
They all did the dishes while some old 60s song was playing in the background.
Singing into a ladle.
He said, "They're friendly. They do a job for me." But there are detractors. The city council received several complaints about the goats, and the city said it will keep citing him until he complies. But he said, and this is a quote, "Right now, I have no plans of getting rid of the goats."
Good for you, sir.
Sorry.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor. Next hour, we have the Rick Emerson Radio Program coming up. But this hour, we still have your Science on the March to come up, as well as entertainment news. That is all on the way. Don't forget, you can get this program later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or legionofnews.com. You can also, if you are so inclined, listen to Ham-Fisted Radio, which is the program that Don Taylor does every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific time, including yesterday. And I'm sure it was a smashing, fantabulous program.
It was. It was actually a very good show. You can download it at hamfistradio.com. Mr. Fatboy Roberts and I, we got into a discussion of something that he had talked to Court on Court and Fatboy about. They are now hosting Geek Trivia twice a month at Vendetta, and they got some complaints from women who were saying, "You need to have more girl geek questions." And so he was asking me what I thought of that.
What does that mean?
That was my response. We spent a certain amount of time saying, with me going, "I'm not sure what would what there would be
geek
different.
Is gender neutral, I think.
Yeah, and then Kristen Bowie came in, and I asked her what she thought of it, and she said pretty much she summed up my 20 minutes of discussion by just saying, we're all into the same stuff.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is there really is a finite... Yeah there is
it took me 20 minutes to say that. She just says it in one sentence because she's better than I am.
There's no Venn diagram. There's just one big circle.
Yeah, so... Like, I want more questions about Buffy and Doctor Who. I don't know what would be more girl geek questions.
Did you see that they're bringing the... So Buffy season 8 is about to come to an end, which is... and it's been running like forever. I didn't know it was at 40 issues or something already. So they're going to be wrapping that up, I think next week, the final Buffy comes out.
I tried to read it because the writing staff was so strong and the art was really good. But like Giant Dawn, I couldn't get past Giant Dawn. at that point, and I was just like, no. Okay. And I've heard how great it is, but I just kept seeing Giant Dawn and just going, I can't get with it.
Cheryl
that.
Was the one who convinced me to start reading it because she was talking about how that it was really, really well done. But what I did not realize and then I discovered last night to my horror is how old I am. Do you know how many years it's been since Buffy went off the air?
Oh, wow. Because we were talking about this the other day when I realized that Serenity was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
15 years?
Well, 12, no,
12,
been
12,
it's
12
been,
years?
It's been 8. It's only been,
it's
eight.
Only been
it was 2003.
So Buffy was still on when Serenity came and went.
Yeah. Well, because it was the whole...
I always think of Buffy as having already been done
time
Firefly.
No, you got to remember that it was... No, because Serenity was the Firefly and Buffy, that was the J.J. Abrams syndrome, where he works on a show until he gets bored with it, and then he starts something else, and then the old show begins to suck because he's got the brand new bright shiny object, which is... And that's what happened. I mean, and if you look at Abrams' career, it's just, and I like J.J. Abrams a lot, but it's a series of just stringing one thing together after another, and they all overlap. And the first 2 years, or the first year or whatever, of the brand new show coincide with the last show, Alias, beginning to suck.
And then this fall he did Undercovers, which just sucked from the beginning.
Yeah. And then
go, J.J.
And that's really when Lost started to get really impenetrable, as he started making more feature films. I think Firefly was in 2002, maybe, possibly 2001. But then, yeah, the final Buffy season 7 ended in 2003.
Yeah, because we started, the thing that brought that to my attention the other day was there's a new show with the actress who starred on Wonderfalls.
Right.
And I went on IMDb just to make sure that I wasn't crazy, that was really her.
How long ago was that?
And, well, I hadn't even thought about how long ago it was. I went on Wonderfalls. That was 2 years ago or something. And it was 2004.
Yep.
And then I did the math. I was like, that can't be, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
So, yeah. So.
Okay. Okay.
Let's do science.
Here's your Science on the March for Thursday, January 20th, 2011.
Researchers have created a new type of glass that is stronger and tougher than steel. This new type of damage-tolerant glass has actually demonstrated a durability greater than any known material. The new metallic glass is a microalloy that features palladium, a metal with a high bulk-to-shear stiffness ratio that counteracts the intrinsic brittleness of glassy materials. Those findings come from experiments conducted at the U.S. Department of Energy's Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory and the California Institute of Technology. Robert Ritchie is a material scientist, and he led the Berkeley contribution to the research. In a press release, he says the new glass is stronger than steel because that glass undergoes extensive plasticity in response to stress, allowing it to bend rather than crack. The first samples of the new metallic glass were relatively small glass rods, just a millimeter in diameter. When Caltech researchers added silver to the microalloy mix, they were able to expand the thickness of the glass rods to 6 millimeters. This metallic glass needs to be rapidly cooled for the final structure, which limits how large the samples can be.
Do you suppose at some point we're going to be able to make something so strong we can't break it?
Yeah, we'll never be able to destroy it. It'll be horrible.
Create something, and then we'll never be able to get rid of it. It'll just be there forever. We'll have to walk around it for the rest of our life.
And then you put it in the mold or whatever, and it comes out wrong, and you're like, oh, crap, this is imperfect. We'll have to, like, sand it down or...
Melt it down and start again.
Nah. No,
and this is just going to be a pile of stuff somewhere in the Mojave Desert that we just have to avoid because we can't get rid of it.
The warmest year on record is a three-way tie, 2010, 2005, and 1998, according to the UN Weather Agency, who provided further evidence Thursday that the planet is slowly but surely heating up. Average temperatures globally last year were 0.95 degrees Fahrenheit, higher than the 1961-90 mean that's used for comparison purposes. That's a little bit lower than the U.S. National Climatic Data Center's announcement earlier this month, but everybody who's looking at these figures says, you know, We're getting warmer.
But that's retarded. How could we? What is that? Why would they just use the mean from 1960 to 1990?
Because for some reason, the World Meteorological Organization has decided, I think they've decided that that is...
The planet's very, very...
what we compare it to.
Very old, is it not? Why would you just pick 30 years that, like, most of us can remember? It seems like if I'm old, if it's recent enough that I can remember it, it probably is not representative of the planet's evolution.
Well, it could be, too, that that's the most detailed data that they have as well.
But see, that in and of itself, I'm not trying to be cranky about it, but doesn't that then indicate that they don't really know what the hell they're talking about?
No, because there are valid researchers who believe that... You know, the Earth does go just through these cycles.
Yeah,
and that what I mean, and I'm not saying that we're not screwing up the planet, with pollution and stuff. Oh, we definitely are.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of evidence that there are these warming and cooling cycles that the planet goes through.
Yeah, this is, you know what this is like people, I think, cannot just, I think people, somehow their brains, this is like that theory that we developed a belief in God because otherwise our knowledge of our own mortality would be, it would give us some sort of a paralyzed, you know, it would be like a paralytic fear agent. There's actually a book, it's not by Richard Dawkins, but it's one of his, a guy who used to work with him, and it's a book called The God Spot. And it's, the whole theory of The God Spot is that once mankind became aware of his own mortality, he knew that he was destined to die, that he then almost immediately, in evolutionary terms, had to develop a belief in an afterlife. Otherwise, you would just sit in your cave all day and go, God, it's so horrible. And you would just never want to leave.
Especially when your average lifespan was like 17.
Seriously. Yeah. By the time you figured it out, you only had like a day left to process everything. You're like a fruit fly at that point. Then you just keel over.
Oh, God, I'm going to die someday. Oh, crap. Like any time now.
So we had to develop this belief in God and an afterlife and a heaven and whatever. So we could go, well, okay, it's taking, look, somebody's handling everything when I'm gone. And then so you could get on with your day. And that's, I think, the thing with global warming is I think we somehow have to have this belief that we are fundamentally changing the planet, like, irrevocably, one way or the other, because the alternative is just to admit that in the grand scheme of things, we don't matter.
Yeah.
That, I mean, we are just, like, such a fingernail pairing in the grand scheme of creation, and that, like, someday we'll be gone and something else will be here in our place.
Well, that's I always find it really kind of hilarious when the big argument is we're destroying the Earth.
No,
we're really not destroying
the
Earth.
It's the other way
around. We're killing ourselves.
Yes, the Earth will destroy us.
The Earth will get along just fine without us, and then, you know, something new will pop up.
Yeah.
Or not. But, you know, either way, it's like, you know, the planet's still going to be here.
Well, especially when you consider the fact that, for all intents and purposes, there was like, you know, there was a day when dinosaurs ran the whole joint, and then, you know, and then the next day they didn't, because a huge rock came out of nowhere and just, like, you know, and just smote the entire lot of them. So I'm just saying. Happy Thursday, everyone.
Okay, well, let's not talk about that anymore. Many young adult couples feel the status of their relationship is somewhat vague. In a recent study, about 40% of young couples had differing opinions about how exclusive their relationship was. And even among those who were on the same page, about 30% reported having cheated. While monogamy is rare in the animal kingdom, for humans...
No, I'm sorry. It doesn't really work.
No, not so much. For humans, it has the practical value of being one of the easiest ways to protect against sexually transmitted diseases. Cheating and miscommunication in ostensibly exclusive relationships could trigger health issues, according to the study. Couples have a hard time talking about these sorts of issues, and I would imagine for young people it's even more difficult, said Jocelyn Warren of Oregon State University. Monogamy comes up quite a bit as a way to protect against sexually transmitted diseases, but you can see that agreement on whether one is monogamous or not is fraught with issues.
Well, because maybe I'm wrong about this, but it seems to me, I would imagine that most people do not ever sit down and just flat out ask the question of, like, are we still going to keep sleeping with other people or not?
Yeah.
Because it's an awkward conversation to have, right? And so at a certain point, I think especially when you're younger, you just sort of assume, we're like, well, he pinned me and we're going to the spring formal, so therefore I'm his gal and he's my guy or whatever. Or a guy will say, like, yeah, Janice and I, we're going out these days. But I don't think at any point, like, Janice and Todd sit down in a room and say, like, are we allowed to put our naked writhing bodies on top of somebody else's? Yes, no, let's vote right now. They just, the discussion is never had in those specific terms.
No, and there's so much of a stigma to it, and there's so much insecurity attached to whether or not, you know, your partner is attracted to other people, to the point where in monogamous relationships, I think that people don't actually talk about it much at all, because one partner may just get sensitive just about the discussion entirely. Like, why? Why do you want to talk about this? You know, I saw you looking at that girl at the Starbucks.
And you just turn into Taub and his wife.
Yeah, and honestly, we've had this discussion many times. We both know people who are polyamorous. And honestly, that just is way more work than I want to get involved in.
Well, it seems like there wouldn't be enough time in the day, really. I mean, things to do.
As I've said before, I think one of the greatest things about being married is you don't have to date anymore.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, though, Patrick and I have had the discussion, and, you know, and we've touched on this many times in our 11 years together just to make sure we're on the same page of, like, if you're ever, like, really, like, just crazy about someone else and you want to pursue it and it seems like it's important to you, let's talk about that. Because, you know, we may still decide no.
You guys just
don't do that.
So you do a spot check every now and again?
Well, yeah, because, well, I come from a family that's rife with divorce. I'm divorced. My first marriage didn't work out. And I've seen so many couples that just, you know, refuse to even acknowledge that you ever find anybody else attractive.
Right. Because,
much less that you would want to,
well,
you know.
Because it's like beaten into you that you're not allowed to do that, or you're not supposed to feel that or whatever. And
once you choose a partner, you are never supposed to ever notice anyone else ever again.
And it also gets drilled into you that if you ever say out loud or you admit out loud that you are, that it's somehow a betrayal, or that it indicates in some way that you don't love whoever you're with or whatever, which is all a bunch of nonsense.
And really the big betrayal is if you're sneaking around and you're lying to your partner.
Right.
That's the betrayal. And of course, as they point out in the study, it also puts your partner at risk of sexually transmitted diseases that they don't know they're at risk of.
Well, I think that's why if you ask a lot of couples, and again, especially, I think maybe the older you get, I think, like, I read this great, there was this study I saw last night said that, let me ask you this, of the various decades, you know, how do I put this, generations of women, there's women in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, whatever. Of all of those sort of decade demarcations in the female population, what group is most likely to have sex on the first date? If you know, women in their teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s.
I'd say 30s.
40s. It is, but the 40s. And so that, because it's like the older you get, I think the less tolerance you just have for just BS.
Yeah.
You know, I think with every passing year, you're like, it's just too much work to just, you know, to either pretend to be what somebody else wants me to be, or to try to change myself into something that somebody wants to be, or to deny who I really am or whatever. But the corollary to that is, I think the younger you are, the more likely you are to either lie to yourself or to the person you're with, or both, by just trying to fit into some weird society-ordained norm, which is why I think, and I don't think a lot of the times it takes the form of active deceit. I think, again, it's just that people don't talk about it, and so as a result, you will get these couples where they're both like 19 or 20 or something, and you ask the girl, so, are you guys exclusive and monogamous? And she says, oh, absolutely. And then you get the guy in the room, and you go, are you exclusive and monogamous? He goes, I don't know, we never really talked about it. So I guess not. It's awesome, you know. Why? Do you know somebody? Is there a party? It's because you're so embarrassed by it, and so it is the point where you really ought to be talking about it. But of course, then you're just your weird sense of shame that's been instilled by your parents and by religion that renders you incapable of talking about it.
Yeah, what was really interesting about this study, and granted, they talked to both married and unmarried couples, 18 to 25. So these are very, very young people. But it turned out that regardless of their marital status, half of the couples disagreed as to whether or not they were seeing each other exclusively. Married couples were no more likely to have an explicit monogamy agreement than couples that were just dating. That the only indicator of exclusivity seemed to be the level of their emotional commitment.
Right.
If they believed in deep in their heart of hearts that they were together forever and ever, then they were more likely to go, oh yeah, we're totally monogamous. But it's like, it basically seems like, you know, they just hadn't, they people aren't really talking about it.
But don't you suspect also that that's the whole, don't you think that a great number of people in relationships don't bring it up or mention it because they're afraid of what the answer will be? And
quite
so they
possibly would
prefer to dwell in they prefer to dwell in the Narnia of their own head where they're reasonably sure that the sky is blue.
And the funny thing is, and like you said, when you do get older, you do become a lot more realistic about these things. It's like, you know, meeting Patrick as a fully formed adult and on my second marriage, you know, there have been conversations where I just looked at him and said, When you have your midlife crisis, and you will,
yeah,
wear a condom. That's all I'm asking. Just wear a condom.
Excellent. You're listening to Legion of News. Is that the, are we at the
end
of
science? That is all the science, yeah.
All right, there you go. That's all the science you need to know for Thursday, January 20th, 2011, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609, or you can contact them via their website at squireselectric.com. They've been in Portland for going on 13 years, and an electrical wiring in your home is something you don't really think about until one day you go to turn on the light switch and it just doesn't work. It's like how you just, it's like how you don't really ever think about where your spare car key is, you know, until you go, well, where's my... Well, crap, come on. Which happened to me, by the way, last week, and I didn't call you because I didn't want to panic you about it, because I was looking at the clock trying to figure out exactly how long I could wait before I had to call a cab to get a cab here from my home. But I put my keys in exactly the same place every night. I have this whole ritual, like you probably do.
I'm somehow surprised by that.
Yeah, I have this. I have a tray that is on a table that is next to the door of my office at home. And in the tray every night goes my money clip, my chapstick, and my car keys. And I can't go to bed, by the way, until I find all three of those things. If they've somehow, like, if I switch jeans or something during the day.
Oh my God! Sure, where's my chapstick?
It's right here, by the way, in case you're. In case you're wondering,
I always wondered how your lips stay so moist and supple.
Emollient, Don. That's right here.
I don't like that.
This is unfortunately bubblegum flavored. But in any event, well, it was the only thing they had. That's not true. It was cheap. Everything else was a dollar.
You are such a girl.
This was 49 cents. In any event, but I put everything by in this tray on this table by the side of the door every night before I go to sleep. And then when I wake up in the morning, you know, like, you know, there we are. Everything's right there. So this one night out of like 10 years, last week, I think I fell asleep in the armchair or whatever in my office. And at some point, the keys had slid down next to the cushion in the chair. They were just gone from sight. They were underneath the chair. But the point is, the next morning, I was just walking around going, what? They were... But and it's like they're not in the tray where they always are, and so therefore my brain has no other suggestions. Like there is no, I have no alternative location for them. And you just don't really...
Are you sure Max didn't stick them in the chair just to screw with you?
He probably did, as some sort of a delayed vengeance for something. But then you just think to yourself, well, don't I have a spare key for the car? And you go, well, of course I do. When I bought the car, they gave me a couple keys for it. It was a brand new car. Where is that spare? I don't know. Why? Because you never use it, because it's always in the same place every day. You don't ever have to look for it. So it is with the wiring, so you don't want to wait and, you know, be that guy where you're wandering around trying to figure out how to get something fixed in your house, especially if it's just dark. You know, it's just like you flip in a light switch and nothing is happening. So write this number down, 503. Put it in your phone. Put it on a business. Put it on your refrigerator. Wherever you put things that you don't want to lose.
But don't lose your phone.
Don't put...
Because then you won't have the phone number.
Don't lose it, but don't put it down the side of the chair. It's 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. SquiresElectric.com. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. That is SquiresElectric.com. By the way, this person is noting that I spent $50. I spent $50+ for a hair conditioner and only 49 cents for my lips. It's true.
Yeah. Yeah, you talk about what a cheap bastard you are, and then yesterday we were talking, was it yesterday or the day before, talking about your, like, insanely expensive panda saliva hair products that you use.
Yeah.
With mango extract and sea salt or whatever that is.
Well, you can't put a price on beauty, Don. The way I look at it is, if you have a luxury car, you're going to spend what it takes to get it waxed and polished regularly. Isn't that right?
Meanwhile, someone sent me an email with a link to a website showing you how to make a candle out of bacon grease.
Awesome.
Because that's what people know I'm interested in.
Fantastic. Here is, that's the end of your science for Thursday. Here's Don Taylor.
A federal grand jury indicted Jared Loughner on Wednesday on charges of attempted murder of Representative Gabrielle Giffords and two aides during a January 8th shooting spree in Tucson, Arizona. U.S. Attorney Dennis Burke said this was the initial indictment and that hinted that more charges are likely. Today's charges are just the beginning of our legal action, he said. Further indictments brought against Loughner will likely involve the slaying of District Judge John Roll and Giffords' aide Gabe Zimmerman. While the maximum penalty for the attempted killing of Giffords is life in prison, Loughner could face the death penalty if indicted in the deaths of Roll and Zimmerman. State murder charges will also probably be brought against the 22-year-old alleged gunman in the deaths of four other people during the rampage. The Justice Department requires us to pursue a deliberate and thorough process, said Attorney Burke. We're working diligently to ensure that our investigation is thorough and the justice is done for the victims and their families.
Did you see that thing where, the day of the shooting, before he actually went and sort of unloaded on everybody, he went to, like, a Motel 6 and just took a bunch of photos of him in a G-string holding the gun?
There's this really interesting, I read, because I used to be really interested in conspiracy theory stuff, and I think it was about John Hinckley, and one of the things in this book, it talked about this pattern of behavior among these guys. It was trying to build a case that these guys are all, like, programmed by some, like, secret right. government agency or something.
It's MK Ultra, Don.
But, you know, but they did make an interesting point that there are these interesting similarities amongst these guys who do these things, including them checking into motels for like a day or two or three before they do what they're going to do, even if it's in the same town that they live, which is kind of, they were doing this to say, see, because that's when they're getting their special instructions from the CIA or something. But really, it is interesting in that I don't know what the thought process is, if it's a matter of wanting to distance yourself.
But it's from, like a blanking action,
yeah,
I would imagine.
Distance yourself yeah. from your regular day-to-day life before you take that next step and do your ultimate crazy.
It's like one of those, it's like an airlock. It's like one of those places, like if you're going to visit a guy who has no, like if you're going to visit John Travolta as the boy in the plastic bubble, it's the little clean room you have to go into beforehand.
Yeah, because I guess Hinckley did it, Sirhan did it. What's his name?
Sounds like two syllables.
Kennedy, three words. Sounds like
Lee Harvey Oswald?
Lee Harvey Oswald, I guess, did that.
Yes.
So it's kind of interesting. That,
no,
you know.
Yeah, I imagine that there's, I mean, that would be an indication that, you know, that crazy is like anything else. It has its own patterns, you know, and the people are nuts. I mean, that's why they can have things like the, whatever that is, like the DSM-4 or whatever, that thing where they can diagnose, like, how nuts you are mm-hmm. because you operate according to a series of, of patterns and, you know, behavioral. You know, whatever, sort of, you know, everybody has their own sort of track that they're running on, and crazy people have their own kind of track. It just
and
manifests itself.
And very specific kinds of crazy
yeah.
also have very specific patterns.
You tip over in a certain way, you're going to manifest that in certain behaviors.
Which, obviously, that's why they can do profiling of serial killers.
Right. There's the guy we talk about, someone, Dennis Radin, the BTK killer. He had this whole thing he would do. Which is so creepy, and it's weird. It's an indication, I think, of how hectic society has become and how overwhelmed we are with information. That we've discussed this before, that, like, what would have just commanded all kinds of press coverage in the past, now you just get it's like a blink of an eye, and then it's gone, because we're on to something else. Or you talk to people, and they just don't even know anything about it. For example, if you ask somebody about John Hinckley Jr., and you say, well, you know, what actress was he obsessed with? Everybody goes, oh, Jodie Foster. Everybody knows that. Because it's like we didn't really have anything else to watch. It was like MASH was over, and it was like there was nothing else on TV. And so I guess I'll watch Dan Rather talk about this Hinckley guy who's crazy. Or if you're like, you know, who Son of Sam, you know, was, you know, he was ordered to kill by what? And everybody goes, oh, his dog, because, like, we all heard about it.
Oh, it was a neighbor's dog, actually.
Was it a dog? But it was a dog yeah. he was barking through. And Sam Kinison said, you don't understand, Your Honor, it was a mean effing dog. But then you get things that are really unbelievably crazy, like the fact that the BTK killer would do this thing where he would go to the, you know, some family's house and he'd snuff the whole crew, and then he would take a bunch of their clothes home, stick them like in a drawer in his basement, and then, like, late at night while his family slept, and you can see these online, and I have, and they're really creepy. I kind of wish I hadn't seen them, and they're not disgusting; they're just disturbing. Then late at night, like while his family slept, he had this elaborate system rigged up in his basement where he could take photographs of himself from across the room, and he would just, like, dress up, often as a woman, in the clothes of, like, the people he had killed, and then he would pose all sexy-like with lots of makeup on.
Oh, wow.
And so he wasn't, I mean, there was nothing violent happening. It would just be, like, him in, like, a frock, you know, or like in a dress with, like, a wig and sort of a, oh, hello! I'm the BTK killer, and then he would have a camera across the room taking photographs of him posed as a lovely lady, and you look at this and you go, what in the name of God? Like, what could your father have beaten you with, and for how long that this would happen to you?
Wow,
that's the thing where you realize there must just be some chemical thing in somebody's head, because, like,
it is. I think it's pretty much commonly believed now that there has to be this confluence of both, like, just sort of chemical, like, you know, neurological crazy. And just, like, bad upbringing.
Yeah.
It's like a combination of the two.
It's like, what other explanation could there be? You know, yeah, there's, I mean, that's the thing where it's exactly the right or wrong combination of, yeah, of, like, your own brain misfiring. Yeah. And then, like, your dad hitting you with a plank every morning for 10 years.
Let's do entertainment news.
Jesus. Here's your entertainment news for a Thursday.
Ricky Ricky Gervais recently blogged about his controversial hosting performance at Sunday's Golden Globes Awards as he thanked the people who supported his work on the show. Thanks to the Twitterverse, the blogosphere, all the journos, and the coolest stars for coming to my rescue, said Gervais. It was heartwarming to realize I wasn't losing my mind. Some reactions nearly had me believe I'd gone too far. Nearly. Can't wait for the people who thought it was over the top to see my stand-up shows. F me, they will S themselves.
I mean... I love Ricky Gervais, but this is just like such a non-story to me. I cannot believe that we are now on day four of talking about jokes, talking about a stand-up comedian, a guy who is fundamentally comic, who is known as a comic actor and is a very, you know, the sort of cutting-edge, innovative, occasionally, I'm trying not to say edgy, but, you know, he's got a very pointed, sharp sense of humor, that we're talking about jokes made about actors.
I honestly believe that if he had done all of the same jokes at the Oscars, they wouldn't be having the same effect.
It's the foreign press club.
Yeah, it's that it was the Golden Globes, which is put on by a bunch of journalists.
You would figure that they would be more continental about it, though, not being American journalists.
No, they're self-important wankers.
Well, I don't have to convince me. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I don't really have a lot of news about this, but the newest season of American Idol began last night.
Do you watch American Idol?
I do up until the point where I get tired of it.
Okay.
I didn't watch it for the first like 5 or 6 years. Then I started watching it because I kind of enjoy the audition shows. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of go, ooh, these are the people they picked. Ooh. And then I watch for a little while. But the thing is, I don't like that kind of singing.
Right.
I don't like the style that they go for.
Yeah.
And I finally just decide I don't really care about any of these people, and I peter out, and then I stop.
Fair enough.
But I usually now, at this point, I will start watching during the early parts, the audition shows. And so the first one was last night. Simon Cowell is gone. Ellen DeGeneres is gone. Now we have Jennifer Lopez and...
Steven Tyler.
So it was kind of interesting. Part of what was fun was just watching Steven Tyler. They had one montage sequence of just showing little clips of him flirting with the prettier contestants, of them walking in and him like, Allison,
hey,
hi.
Oh, yeah,
ooh,
yeah.
I like those boots.
Awesome.
Hey. And then, but if you want to know, I guess, what we could have to look forward to of an American Idol with Steven Tyler, you pull down the background music. Here is a little, just a little sound bite I pulled from the show last night, which I think I enjoyed very much. This is Idol 1.
Oh, okay. This is in the Dropbox?
It was in the Dropbox. You were supposed to pull it from the
Dropbox. Well, I was going to mention this to you earlier when you said there's something in the Dropbox. And then I was going to say, are you sure about that?
Yeah, so there's audio in the Dropbox, and there was audio in the Dropbox.
Oh, this is Idol 1, but this is a text file.
Oh, hell.
This is not an... I was... Because you didn't actually tell me what it was called. You just said there was something there.
Oh.
And there are no MP3s or anything. It's...
Well, I can play it as an
this
MP3.
Is, yeah, if you can play it, this is...
All
it's just
right.
Showing up as a text link
where's,
over here.
Where's that... Is that this?
Let me...
I don't think that's this.
What if I change the extension? Hold on, let's see.
We're awesome!
Is it an MP3, theoretically?
Yeah.
All right, let me see if I can manually... Let me change the extension to MP3. Let's see if this works. Yeah, I got nothing.
Okay. Well, just, I'll tell you what. Just turn that sound down, and I will pull up my stuff here, and we will do it this way.
Oh, really? Honestly?
This is the best I can do.
You know, there's a plug right there in front of you.
And it... Shut up.
It's billion-dollar technology.
Okay, I'm doing this wrong. I'm so angry right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dawn Taylor is picking up her microphone and holding her microphone in front of her laptop.
I am.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, life is hard. Any minute now. Here we go.
Is Steven Tyler turned into a minuscule bee?
Where are you?
Okay.
It was playing just a second ago.
Uh-huh. And we all believe you.
I'm filled with anger. Okay,
show me
this.
The way to go home.
We'll talk about it later, another time. Just pretend that didn't happen. Florence Henderson of the Brady Bunch is writing a memoir scheduled for September 2011. Brady Bunch cast members Barry Williams and Maureen McCormick have also written memoirs. I have Barry Williams' memoir at home, by the way.
Is that Growing Up Brady?
Yes.
It's a fantastic book.
In a statement from Center Street, the publishers of the upcoming book, Henderson will write, quote, of a Dickensian childhood in rural Indiana.
I don't think that means what she thinks it means.
I'm not sure. Sex and the City's Kristen Davis will host the 13th Annual Costume Designers Guild Awards February 22nd at the Beverly Hilton. And no one cares. Bob Dylan has signed a deal to write 6 books with Simon & Schuster. Really, 6?
Are these going to be 6 novels? Are these going to be 6?
Well, 2 of them will be sequels to his Chronicles Volume 1.
Oh, God, no one cares.
And another installment will be on his radio show at Sirius, but there's no word of the subject matter of what the other 3 would be.
Yeah, I try so hard to like Bob Dylan, but he makes it so difficult. That's the thing. Is it... Bob Dylan makes it very... You're still obsessed with the Steven Tyler thing, aren't you?
No, I was just turning it off, and so I didn't have to look at it.
The best part is...
I'm making it go away now.
Is how there was just sort of this noise in the background.
No.
If you were to ask me, I would have had some Steven Tyler sound ready if you'd really wanted to hear him say something.
I had this clip. I had it. I did it. I put it in the Dropbox. It should have worked.
I'm just saying.
I don't know what happened.
It's not like I'm without, you know...
I did everything I thought I needed to do.
She was buns up and kneeling. I was a wheeling and a dealing. Yeah.
Well, next hour I'll play you my Steven Tyler book. Actress Anne Hathaway will star as Selina Kyle, the Catwoman, in The Dark Knight Rises. I am thrilled to have the opportunity to work with Anne Hathaway, who will be a fantastic addition to our ensemble as we complete our story. Inception actor Tom Hardy returns to work with Christopher Nolan in the film, as he will play one of Batman's most dangerous enemies, Bane.
See, I saw this last night. It was one of those things I was looking at the Google Trends, and this was like one of the most searched things was Dark Knight Rises. Is that it?
Yeah.
And they were talking about so-and-so has to put on a bunch of weight to play Bane. And this is where my comic knowledge, my bat-foo is weak, because I don't really know who Bane is.
They used Bane in one of the previous Batman movies as a weird... Who was he with? The Riddler was teamed up with him. He's just an enormous, gigantic guy who I believe has some kind of chemicals pumped into him to artificially make him enormous and huge and phenomenally strong.
Do you feel like, though, the problem is... That they're just there, and I don't, and I'm saying this because of Heath Ledger, just in general, that there just is no topping the Joker. I mean, that's the problem. Is he just there is in the world of Batman, at least from my knowledge? Again, I'm not a Batman expert or anything, but just, you know, I maybe know a little bit more about Batman than the lay person. But it seems like the Joker really is he's the toppermost of the poppermost. There, it's just you're never going to find a villain who is better than that guy.
I also don't understand why in these movies they feel like they have to double up or triple up on the villains.
Well, that's probably, but it probably is just because of what we just said, that like the Joker was so great that they feel like there's no any one villain would be lackluster and uninteresting, so they'll get 5 lackluster, uninteresting villains and put them on the screen.
A well-written Catwoman story could be really interesting. A well-written Riddler story could be really interesting. It's just a matter of, you know, I mean, granted, yeah, you can't top Heath Ledger's Joker, but you could still have just, you know, a terrific, complex, very layered movie with one damn bad guy.
I guess, but my other thing is, like, don't you feel like they could almost go the other way and have it be just as successful? What if they did this? What if they did not have a supervillain? In other words, what if it was, it's not like it has to be Hans Gruber, but what if it was Batman versus just, you know, a guy who was just evil? Who, you know, but he didn't necessarily put on like a toucan outfit or something to do it.
In the early Batman, in like the detective comics,
he just fought crime.
He just fought crime.
Yeah,
just,
regular criminals.
I remember one in particular where he figured out who this guy was because there was a hammer left behind and it was a Cooper's hammer. So he knew to go to the barrel factory, and he found like the guy who was like robbing people and mugging them at the barrel factory. That's what Batman used to do. He just fought crime.
Yeah, it just seems like they're trying to oversolve the problem, because then you can, I mean, I'm not trying to jinx the film or whatever for TV, maybe, but then they just get into the whole, Batman and Robin phenomenon where the screen is just filled with day-glow clutter that you don't want to watch.
No. And there also, there's going to be a spinoff of the TV show Bones. This season, they're going to introduce a character played by Michael Clark Duncan. He's going to be Walter Sherman, a former military policeman who has a knack for finding anything. And then he's not Walter Sherman. He's Walter's right-hand man, Leo, Michael Clark Duncan. I have no idea who the actual star of the show will be. That's a terrible press release when you go, woohoo, Michael Clark Duncan's going to star in a TV show. Okay, he's not actually the star. He's the sidekick.
That's
thank you, Entertainment News.
That is one of the other manifestations of the lack of copy editors. You and I have described how this is really, you can chart, if you were to look at some sort of a graph showing the literacy present in American press releases, you'd be able to see it just steadily trending downward for the last 12 years as you walk into newsrooms and they are largely empty.
Yes.
All right. Is that the end of our entertainment news?
That is. Right. And pretty much the end of just about everything, I think, really. I could read one more Portland-related story really quickly.
Oh, do it. Dare to dream.
Can I? The federal agency that manages fisheries says it can fix problems a federal appeals court has identified with a state program to kill sea lions feeding on salmon at the Bonneville Dam. What they will fix, however, is uncertain. The NOAA Fisheries Service spokesman said Wednesday the agency will not fight the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling last November. The Humane Society filed a lawsuit to stop the federally authorized state program that has killed 27 California sea lions over the past 2 years. The court said the NOAA fisheries had failed to show how it could let fishermen kill some endangered salmon when it would not let sea lions eat a smaller number of fish. So
confused. It's like a story problem.
All right. It's like, well, you know, how are the sea lions a problem when you have fishermen who are killing vastly more salmon than the sea lions are, is basically the question. You know, it's obviously not an environmental problem. It's something that they're doing for the fishermen, not for the environment.
This is weird. This is like some Jacques Cousteau meets Lewis Carroll in a rhyme or something.
Well, the upshot is, yay, sea lions!
Hooray! Thank you for joining us. This has been another exciting installment of Legion of News. You can get it later on today at iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program comes up next hour featuring a clown watch, taser watch, Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, and we'll count down the top five classic bubblegum songs of all time. So if you find our wit and merriment amusing, and really, how could you not? It seems like an almost physical impossibility.
We're awesome.
That's right. You can hear hours more of it for just 32 cents a day at rickemersonshow.com. That's rickemersonshow.com. At the news desk, Dawn Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kenokoa. Thank you for listening. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for another exciting episode of Legion of News. Have a safe and satisfying Thursday. Won't you please?